figured out. The king of all hair dyes, he will say to me, Lopin, you are glowing and this is impressive, but you can also fly. For this, you may marry my daughter.
The king of hair dyes doesn't have a daughter, Sigsel said.
He doesn't? I have been lied to all this time.
You don't know your royal family? Kaladin asked, sitting up.
Gone? I haven't been to hair dyes since I was a baby. There are as many Herdazians in Alethkar and Yuccaved these days as there are in our homeland. Flick my sparks, I'm practically an Alethi, only not so tall and not so grouchy.
Rock gave Kaladin a hand and pulled him to his feet. Syl had taken a perch on the wall. Do you know how this works? Kaladin asked her. She shook her head. But the assassin is a windrunner, Kaladin said.
I think, Syl said, something like you. Maybe,
she shrugged. Sigsel followed the direction that Kaladin was looking.
I wish I could see it, he mumbled. It would be a...
Gah!
He jumped backward, pointing.
It looks like a little person.
Kaladin raised an eyebrow toward Syl.
I like him, she said. Also, Sigsel, I'm a she and not an it, thank you very much. Spren have genders? Sigsel asked, amazed. Of course, she said. Though technically, it probably has something to do with the way people view us. Personification of the forces of nature or some similar gobbledy-blarthy.
Doesn't that bother you? Kaladin asked. That you might be a creation of human perception?
You're a creation of your parents. Who cares how we were born? I can think. That's good enough.
She grinned in a mischievous way, then zipped down as a ribbon of light toward Sigsel, who had settled down on a rock with a stunned expression. She stopped right in front of him, returned to the form of a young woman, then leaned in and made her face look exactly like his.
Gah!
Sigsel cried again, scrambling away, making her giggle and change her face back. Sigsel looked toward Kaladin.
She talks like a real person.
He raised a hand to his head.
The stories say the Night Watcher might be capable of that. Powerful Spren. Vast Spren. Is he calling me vast?
Syl said, cocking her head to the side.
Not sure what I think of that.
Sigsel, Kaladin said, could the Windrunners fly? The men gingerly sat back down, still staring at Syl.
Stories and lore aren't my specialty, he said. I tell of different places, to make the world smaller and to help men understand each other. I've heard legends speak of people dancing on the clouds, but who is to say what is fancy and what is truth from stories so old?
We've got to figure this out, Kaladin said. The assassin will return.
So, Rock said, jump at the wall some more. I will not laugh much.
He settled down on a boulder and plucked a small crab off the ground beside him. He inspected it, then popped it into his mouth and began chewing.
Ew,
Sigsel said.
Tastes good,
Rock said, speaking with his mouth full.
What better with salt and oil?
Kaladin regarded the wall, then closed his eyes and drew in more stormlight. He felt it inside of him, beating against the walls of his veins and arteries, trying to escape, daring him forward, to jump, to move, to do.
So, Sigsel said to the others, are we assuming that the assassin in white was the one who sabotaged the king's railing?
Bah,
Rock said.
Why would he do this thing? He could kill more easily.
Yeah, Lopin agreed. Maybe the railing was done by one of the other high princes.
Kaladin opened his eyes and looked at his arm, palm against the slick wall of the chasm, elbow straight. Stormlight rose from his skin, curling wisps of light that vaporized in the air. Rock nodded.
All high princes want the king dead, though they will not speak of this. One of them sent saboteur.
So how did this saboteur get to the balcony?
Sigsel asked.
It must have taken some time to cut through the railing.
It was metal.
Unless... How smooth was that cut, Kaladin?
Kaladin narrowed his eyes, watching that stormlight rise. It was raw power. No, power was the wrong term. It was a force, like the surges that ruled the universe. They made fire burn, made rocks fall, made light glow. These wisps, they were the surges reduced to some primal form. He could use it. Use it to...
Cal?
Sigzel's voice asked, though it seemed distant, like an unimportant buzzing.
How smooth was the cut to the railing? Could it have been a shard blade?
The voice faded. For a moment, Kaladin thought he saw shadows of a world that was not, shadows of another place, and in that place, a distant sky with a sun enclosed, almost as if by a corridor of clouds. There. He made the direction of the wall become down. Suddenly, his arm was all that was supporting him. He fell forward into the wall, grunting. His awareness of his surroundings returned in a crash, only his perspective was bizarre. He scrambled to his feet and found himself standing on the wall. He backed up a few paces, walking up the side of the chasm. To him, that wall was the floor, and the other three bridgemen stood on the actual floor, which looked like the wall. This, Kaladin thought, is going to get confusing.
Wow, Lopin said, standing up excitedly. Yeah, this is really going to be fun. Run up the wall, Goncho.
Kaladin hesitated, then turned and started running. It was like he was in a cave, the two walls of the chasm, the top and bottom. Those slowly squeezed together as he moved toward the sky. Feeling the rush of the stormlight within him, Kaladin grinned. Syl streaked along beside him, laughing. The closer they got to the top, the narrower the chasm became. Kaladin slowed, then stopped. Syl streaked out in front of him, zipping out of the chasm as if leaping from the mouth of the cave. She turned about, a ribbon of light.
Come on, she called to him. Out onto the plateau, into the sunlight.
There are scouts out there, he said, watching for gem hearts.
Come out anyway. Stop hiding, Kaladin. Be.
Lopin and Rock whooped below in excitement. Kaladin stared outward at the blue sky.
I have to know, he whispered.
No?
You ask me why I protect Dalinar. I have to know if he really is what he seems, Syl. I have to know if one of them lives up to his reputation. That will tell me...
Tell you?
She asked, becoming the image of a full-size young woman standing on the wall before him. She was nearly as tall as he was, her dress fading to mist.
Tell you what?
If honor is dead, Kaladin whispered.
He is, Syl said. But he lives on in men. And in me.
Kaladin frowned.
Dalinar Kholin is a good man, Syl said.
He is friends with Amaram. He could be the same inside.
You don't believe that.
I have to know, Syl, he said, stepping forward.
He tried to take her arm as he would a human's, but she was too insubstantial. His hand passed through.
I can't just believe it. I need to know. You asked what I want. Well, that's it. I want to know if I can trust Dalinar. And if I can...
He nodded toward the light of the day outside the chasm.
If I can, I'll tell them what I can do. I will believe that at least one Light Eyes won't try to take everything from me. Like Rishon did. Like Amaram did. Like Sadeus did.
And that is what it will take? She asked.
I warned you that I was broken, Syl.
No. You've been reforged. It can happen to men.
To other men, yes,
Kaladin said, raising his hand, feeling the scars on his forehead.
Why had the stormlight never healed those? I'm not certain about myself yet, but I will protect Dalinar Kholin with everything I have. I will learn who he is, who he really is. Then maybe we'll give him his Knight's Radiant.
And Amaram? What of him?
Pain. Tien. Him I'm going to kill.
Kaladin,
she said, hands clasped before her. Don't let this destroy you.
It can't, he said, Stormlight running out. His uniform coat began to fall backward toward the ground, as did his hair.
Amaram already took care of that.
The ground below fully reasserted itself, and Kaladin fell backward away from her. He sucked in Stormlight, twisting in the air as his veins flared back to life. He landed feet first in a rush of power and light. The other three remained silent for a few moments as he stood up straight.
That, Brock said, was very fast way to get down. Ha! But it did not include falling on face, which would be fun. So you get only soft clap.
He proceeded to clap. It was indeed soft. Lopin, however, cheered, and Sigzil nodded with a wide grin. Kaladin snorted, grabbing a water skin. The king's railing was cut with a shard blade, Sigzil. He took a drink. And no, it wasn't the assassin in white. That attempt on Elokar's life was too crude. Sigzil nodded. What's more, Kaladin said, the railing must have been cut after the high storm that night. Otherwise the wind would have blown the railing out of shape. So our saboteur, a shard-bearer, somehow got out onto the balcony after the storm. Lopin shook his head, catching the waterskin as Kaladin threw it back.
We're supposed to believe that one of the camp's shard-bearers snuck through the palace and got onto that balcony gone, and nobody noticed him?
Could someone else do this thing?
Rock said, gesturing to the wall.
Walk up it?
I doubt it, Kaladin said. A rope, Sigzil said. They looked to him. If I wanted to sneak a shardbearer in, I'd bribe some servant to let down a rope. Sigzil shrugged. One could be smuggled out onto the railing easily, perhaps wrapped around the servant's body under their clothing. The saboteur and maybe some friends could climb up the rope, cut the railing and dig at the mortar, then climb back down. The accomplice then cuts the rope and goes back inside. Kaladin nodded slowly.
So, Rock said, we find out who went on balcony after storm, and we find accomplice. Easy. Ha! Maybe you are not airsick, Sigzil. No. Probably just a little.
Kaladin felt unsettled. Moash had been out on that balcony between the storm and the king's near fall.
I'll ask around, Sigzil said, rising.
No, Kaladin said quickly. I'll do it. Don't speak a word of this to anyone else. I want to see what I can find.
All right, Sigzil said. He nodded toward the wall. Can you do that again?
More tests? Kaladin asked with a sigh.
We have time, Sigzil said. Besides, I believe Rock wants to see if you fall on your face.
Ah!
All right, Kaladin said. But I'm going to have to drain some of those spheres we're using for light. He glanced toward them sitting in little piles on the too clean ground. By the way, why did you clear away the rubble in this area?
Clear it away? Sigzil asked.
Yeah, Kaladin said. There was no need to go moving remains around, even if they are just skeletons. He trailed off as Sigzil picked up a sphere and held it up toward the wall, exposing something Kaladin had missed before. Deep gouges where the moss had been scraped off, the rock scored. Chasm fiend. One of the massive great shells had passed through the area, and its bulk had scraped everything away.
I didn't think they came this close to the war camps, Kaladin said. Maybe we shouldn't train the lads down here for a while just in case.
The others nodded.
He's gone now, Rock said. Otherwise, we'd have been eaten. It's obvious. So, back to training.
Kaladin nodded, though those gouges haunted him as he practiced. A few hours later, they led a tired group of former bridgemen back into their barrack block. Exhausted as they looked, the men of Bridge 17 seemed more lively than they'd been before going down into the chasm. They perked up even more when they reached their barrack and found one of Rock's apprentice chefs fixing them a big pot of stew. It was dark by the time Kaladin and Teft got back to Bridge 4's own barrack. Another of Rock's apprentices was fixing the stew here, Rock himself, having gotten back a little earlier than Kaladin, tasting and giving criticism. Shen moved behind Rock, stacking bowls. Something was wrong. Kaladin stopped just outside the light of the fire pit, and Teft froze beside him.
"Something is off," Teft said.
"Yeah," Kaladin agreed, scanning the men. They were clumped together on one side of the fire, some seated, others standing in a group. Their laughter forced, their postures nervous. When you trained men for war, they started to use combat stances whenever they were uncomfortable. Something on the other side of the fire was a threat. Kaladin stepped into the light and found a man sitting there in a nice uniform, hands down at his side, head bowed. Renarin Kolin. Oddly, he was rocking back and forth with a small motion, staring at the ground. Kaladin relaxed.
"Bright Lord," Kaladin said, stepping over to him.
"Is there something you need?" Renarin scrambled to his feet and saluted.
"I would like to serve under your command, sir."
Inside, Kaladin groaned.
"Let's talk away from the fire, Bright Lord."
He took the spindly prince by the arm, leading him away from the ears of the others.
"Sir," Renarin said, speaking softly, "I want—"
"You shouldn't call me sir," Kaladin whispered. "You're light-eyed. Storms, you're the son of the most powerful man in Eastern Roshar."
"I want to be in Breach 4," Renarin said.
Kaladin rubbed his forehead. During his time as a slave, dealing with much larger problems, he had forgotten about the headaches of dealing with highborn light eyes. Once, he might have assumed he'd heard the most outlandish of their ridiculous demands. Not so, it seemed.
"You can't be in Bridge 4. We're bodyguards for your own family.
What are you going to do, guard yourself?"
"I won't be a liability, sir. I'll work hard."
"I don't doubt you would, Renarin."
"Look, why do you want to be in Bridge 4? "My father and my brother," Renarin said softly, face shadowed. "They're warriors. Soldiers." "I'm not, if you haven't noticed."
"Yes, something about—"
"Physical ailments," Renarin said. "I've a blood weakness."
"That's a folk description of many different conditions," Kaladin said. "What do you really have?"
"I'm epileptic," Renarin said. "It means—"
"Yes, yes. Is it idiopathic or symptomatic?" Renarin stood absolutely still in the darkness. "Was it caused by a specific brain injury?" Kaladin asked. "Or is it something that just started happening for no reason?"
"I've had it since I was a kid."
"How bad are the seizures?"
"They're fine," Renarin said quickly. "It's not as bad as everyone says. It's not like I fall to the ground or froth like everyone thinks. My arm will jerk a few times, or I'll twitch uncontrollably for a few moments."
"You retain consciousness?"
"Yeah."
"Myoclonic, probably," Kaladin said. "You've been given bitter leaf to chew?"
Yes. "I don't know if it helps. The jerking isn't the whole problem. A lot of times when it's happening, I get really weak, particularly along one side of my body."
"Huh," Kaladin said. "I suppose that could fit with the seizures. Have you ever had any persistent relaxation of the muscles? An inability to smile on one side of your face, for example?"
"No. How do you know these things? Aren't you a soldier?"
"I know some field medicine."
"Field medicine? For epilepsy?"
Kaladin coughed into his hand. "Well, I can see why they didn't want you going into battle. I've seen men with wounds that caused similar symptoms, and the surgeons always dismissed those men from duty. It's no shame not to be fit enough for battle, Bright Lord. Not every man is needed for fighting."
"Sure," Renarin said bitterly. "Everyone tells me that. Then they all go back to fighting. The Ardents, they claim every calling is important, but then what do they teach about the afterlife? That it's a big war to reclaim the Tranquiline Hills. That the best soldiers in this life are glorified in the next."
"If the afterlife really is a big war," Kaladin said, "then I hope I end up in damnation. At least there I might be able to get a wink or two of sleep."
"Regardless, you're no soldier." "I want to be." "Bright Lord, you don't have to set me to doing anything important," Renarin said.
I came to you instead of one of the other battalions because most of your men spend their time patrolling. If I'm patrolling, I won't be in much danger, and my fits won't hurt anyone. But at least I can see, I can feel what it's like.
He rushed on. Kaladin had never heard so many words from the normally quiet young man.
I will obey your commands, Renarin said. Treat me like a new recruit. When I'm here, I'm not a prince's son. I'm not a Light Eyes. I'm just another soldier. Please, I want to be a part of it. When Adolin was young, my father made him serve in a spearman squad for 2 months.
He did? Kaladin asked, genuinely surprised.
Father said every officer should serve in the shoes of his men, Renarin said. I have shards now. I'm going to be in war, but I've never felt what it's like to really be a soldier. I think this is the closest I'll be able to get. Please?
Kaladin folded his arms, looking the youth over. Renarin looked anxious, very anxious. He'd formed his hands to fists, though Kaladin could see no sign of the box Renarin often fiddled with when nervous. He'd begun breathing deeply, but it set his jaw and kept his eyes forward. Coming to see Kaladin, to ask this of him, terrified the young man for some reason. He'd done it anyway. Could one ask anything more of a recruit? Am I really considering this? It seemed ludicrous. And yet one of Kaladin's jobs was to protect Renarin. If he could pound some solid self-defense skills into him, that would go a long way toward helping him survive assassination attempts.
I should probably point out, Renarin said, how much easier it will be to guard me if I'm spending time training with your men. Your resources are thin, sir. Having one fewer person to protect must be appealing. The only times I'll leave are the days when I practice my shards under Swordmaster Zile.
Kaladin sighed. You really want to be a soldier?
Yes, sir.
Go take those dirty stool bowls and wash them, Kaladin said, pointing. Then help Rock clean his cauldron and put away the cooking implements.
Yes, sir,
Renarin said, with an enthusiasm Kaladin had never heard from anyone assigned washing duty. Renarin jogged over and began happily snatching up bowls. Kaladin folded his arms and leaned against the barrack. The men didn't know how to react to Renarin. They'd hand over bowls of half-finished stew to please him, and conversation hushed when he was too near. But they'd been nervous around Shen, too, before eventually coming to accept him. Could they ever do the same for Light Eyes? Moesh had refused to hand his bowl to Renarin, washing it himself, as was their common practice. Once done, he strolled over to Kaladin. You're really going to let him join? I'll speak to his father tomorrow, Kaladin said. Get the High Prince's read on it. I don't like it. Bridge 4, our nightly conversations. These things are supposed to be safe from them, you know?
Yeah, Kaladin said. But he's a good kid. I think if any Light Eyes could fit in here, he could.
Moesh turned, raising an eyebrow toward him.
You disagree, I presume? Kaladin asked.
He doesn't act right, Cal. The way he talks, the way he looks at people. He's strange. That's not important, though. He's light-eyed, and that should be enough. It means we can't trust him.
We don't need to, Kaladin said. We're just going to keep an eye on him, maybe try to train him to defend himself.
Moesh grunted, nodding. He seemed to accept those as good reasons for letting Renarin stay.
I've got Moesh here, Kaladin thought. Nobody else is close enough to hear. I should ask. But how did he form the words? Moesh, were you involved in a plot to kill the king?
Have you thought about what we're going to do? Moesh asked. Regarding Amaram, I mean.
Amaram is my problem.
You're Bridge 4, Moesh said, taking Kaladin by the arm. Your problem is our problem. He's the one who made you a slave.
He did more than that,
Kaladin growled softly, ignoring Syl's gesturing that he should remain quiet.
He killed my friends, Moesh, right before my eyes. He's a murderer.
Then something has to be done.
It does.
Kaladin asked, but what?
You think I should go to the authorities?
Moash laughed. What are they going to do? You have to get the man into a duel, Kaladin. Bring him down, man against man. Until you do it, something's going to feel wrong to you, deep down in your gut.
You sound like you know what this feels like.
Yeah. Moash gave a little half-smile. I have some Voidbringers in my past, too. Maybe that's why I understand you. Maybe that's why you understand me.
Then what?
I don't really want to talk about it, Moash said.
We're Bridge Four, Kaladin said. Like you said. Your problems are mine. What did the king do to your family, Moash?
Suppose that's true, Moash said, turning away. Not tonight. Tonight I just want to relax. Moash, Teft called from nearer the fire. You coming?
I am,
Moash called back.
What about you, Lopin? You ready?
Lopin grinned, standing up and stretching beside the fire.
I am Lopin, which means I am ready for anything at any time. You should know this by now.
Nearby, Dre snorted and flipped a chunk of stewed long root at Lopin. It splattered against the Herdazian's face. Lopin kept right on talking.
As you can see, I was perfectly ready for that, as shown by the poise I display as I make this decidedly rude gesture.
Teft chuckled as he, Pete, and Sigzel walked over to join Lopin. Moash moved to go with them, then hesitated.
You coming, Cal?
Where?
Kaladin asked.
Out, Moash said, shrugging. Visit a few taverns, play some rings, get something to drink.
Out. The Bridgeman had rarely done such things in Sadeus's army, at least not as a group, with friends. At first they had been too beaten down to care for anything other than sticking their noses in drink. Later, lack of funds and the general prejudice against them among the troops had worked to keep the Bridgemen to themselves. That wasn't the case any longer. Kaladin found himself stammering.
I probably ought to stay, to go look in at the fires of the other crews.
Come on, Cal, Moash said. You can't always work.
I'll go with you another time.
Fine.
Moash jogged over to join the others. Syl left the fire where she'd been dancing with the Flamespren and zipped over to Kaladin. She hung in the air, watching the group walk off into the evening.
Why didn't you go?
She asked him.
I can't live that life anymore, Syl, Kaladin said. I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
But...
Kaladin walked away and got himself a bowl of stew.
42. Mere Vapors. But as for Ishii Lin, his was the part most important at their inception. He readily understood the implications of surges being granted to men and caused organization to be thrust upon them, as having too great power, he let it be known that he would destroy each and every one unless they agreed to be bound by precepts and laws. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 2, page 4. Shallan awoke to humming. She opened her eyes, finding herself snuggled into the luxurious bed in Sabariel's manor. She'd fallen asleep in her clothing. The humming was pattern on the comforter beside her. He looked almost like lace embroidery. The window shades had been drawn. She didn't remember doing that, and it was dark outside. The evening of the day she'd arrived at the plains. Did someone come in? She asked Pattern, sitting up, pushing stray locks of red hair from her eyes. Someone's gone now. Shallan rose and wandered into her sitting room. Ash's eyes, she almost didn't want to walk on the pristine white carpeting. What if she left tracks and ruined it? Pattern's someone's had left food on the table. Suddenly ravenous, Shallan sat down on the sofa, lifting the lid off the tray to find flatbread that had been baked with sweet paste in the center, along with dipping sauces. Remind me, she said, to thank Pallona in the morning. That woman is divine. No, I think she is... Ah, exaggeration? You catch on quickly, Shallan said, as Pattern became a three-dimensional mass of twisting lines, a ball hanging in the air above the seat beside her. No, he said. I am too slow. You prefer some food, and not others. Why? The taste, Shallan said. I should understand this word, Pattern said. But I do not really. Storms. How did you describe taste? It's like color you see with your mouth. She grimaced. And that was an awful metaphor. Sorry. I have trouble being insightful on an empty stomach. You say you are on the stomach, Pattern said. But I know you do not mean this. Context allows me to infer what you truly mean. In a way, the very phrase is a lie. It's not a lie, Shallan said, if everyone understands and knows what it means. Those are some of the best lies. Pattern, Shallan said, breaking off a piece of flatbread. Sometimes you're about as intelligible as a Bavlander trying to quote ancient Vorin poetry. A note beside the food said that Vatha and her soldiers had arrived and had been quartered in a tenement nearby. Her slaves had been incorporated into the manor's staff for the time being. Chewing on the bread, it was delightful. Shallan went over to her trunks with the intent of unpacking. When she opened the first, however, she was confronted by a blinking red light. Tin's span read. Shallan stared at it. That would be the person who relayed Tin's information. Shallan assumed it was a woman, though since the information relay station was in Tashik, they might not even be Vorin. It could be a man. She knew so little. She was going to have to be very careful. Storms. She might get herself killed even if she was careful. Shallan was tired, however, of being pushed around. These people knew something about Urethiru. It was, dangerous or not, Shallan's best lead. She took out the span reed, prepared its board with paper, and placed the reed. Once she turned the dial to indicate she had set up, the pen remained hanging there, immobile, but did not immediately start writing. The person trying to contact her had stepped away. The pen could have been in there blinking for hours. She'd have to wait until the person on the other side returned. Inconvenient, she said, then smiled at herself. Was she really complaining about waiting a few minutes for instantaneous communication across half the world? I will need to find a way to contact my brothers, she thought. That would be distressingly slow without a span read. Could she arrange a message through one of these relay stations in Tashik, using a different intermediary, perhaps? She settled back down on the couch, pen and writing board near the tray of food, and looked through the stack of previous communications that Tin had exchanged with this distant person. There weren't many. Tin had probably destroyed them periodically. The ones remaining involved questions regarding Yasna, House Devar, and the Ghost Bloods. One oddity stood out to Shallan. The way Tin spoke of this group wasn't like that of a thief and one-off employers. Tin spoke of getting in good and moving up within the Ghost Bloods. Pattern, Pattern said. What? Shallan asked, looking toward him. Pattern, he replied. In the words, Of this sheet? Shallan asked, holding up the page. There and others, Pattern said. See the first words? Shallan frowned, inspecting the sheets. In each one, the first words came from the remote writer, a simple sentence asking after Tin's health or status. Tin replied simply each time. I don't understand, Shallan said. They form groups of five, Pattern said. Quintets, the letters. Each message follows a pattern. The first three words start with one each of three of the quintet of letters. Tin's reply, the two that match. Shallan looked it over, though she couldn't see what pattern meant. He explained it again, and she thought she grasped it, but the pattern was complex. A code, Shallan said. It made sense. You'd want a way to authenticate that the right person was on the other end of the span read. She blushed as she realized she'd almost ruined this opportunity. If Pattern hadn't seen this, or if the span read had started writing immediately, Shallan would have exposed herself. She couldn't do this. She couldn't infiltrate a group skilled and powerful enough to bring down Yasna herself. She just couldn't. And yet she had to. She got out her sketchbook and started to draw, letting her fingers move on their own. She needed to be older, but not too much older. She'd be dark-eyed. People would remark upon a light eyes they didn't know moving through camp. A dark eyes would be more invisible. To the right people, though, she could imply that she was using the eye drops. Dark hair. Long, like her real hair, but not red. Same height, same build, but a much different face. Worn features like Tin's. A scar across the chin, a more angular face. Not as pretty, but not ugly either. More straightforward. She sucked in Stormlight from the lamp beside her, and that energy made her draw more quickly. It wasn't excitement. It was a need to go forward. She finished with a flourish and found a face staring back at her from the page, almost alive. Shallan breathed out light and felt it envelop her, twist about her. Her vision clouded for a moment, and she saw only the glow of that fading Stormlight. Then it was gone. She didn't feel any different. She prodded at her face. It felt the same. Had she... The lock of hair hanging down over her shoulder was black. Shallan stared at it, then rose from her seat, eager and timid at the same time. She crossed to the washroom and stepped up to the mirror there, looking at a face transformed, one with tan skin and dark eyes. The face from her drawing, given color and life. It works, she whispered. This was more than changing scuffs in her dress or making herself look older as she'd done before. This was a complete transformation. What can we do with this? Whatever we imagine, Pattern said from the wall nearby. Or whatever you can imagine. I am not good with what is not. But I like it. I like the taste of it. He seemed very pleased with himself at that comment. Something was off. Shallan frowned, holding up her sketch, realizing she'd left a spot unfinished on the side of the nose. The light weaving there didn't cover up her nose completely and had a kind of fuzzy gap in the side. It was small. Someone else would probably just see it as a strange scar. To her it seemed glaring and offended her artistic sense. She prodded at the rest of the nose. She'd made it slightly larger than her real one, and could reach through the image to touch her nose. The image had no real substance to it. In fact, if she moved her finger quickly through the tip of the false nose, it fuzzed to Stormlight, like smoke that had been blown away by a gust. She removed her fingers, and the image snapped back into place, though it still had that gap on the side. Sloppy drawing on her part. How long will the image last? She asked. It feeds on light, Pattern said. Shallan dug the spheres from her safe pouch. They were all done. She'd likely used those up in the conversation with the High Princes. She took one from the lamp on the wall, replacing it with a dun sphere of the same denomination, and carried it in her fist. Shallan went back into the sitting room. She'd need a different outfit, of course. A dark-eyed woman wouldn't. The span reed was writing. Shallan hastened over to the sofa, breath catching as she saw the words appear. I think some information I have today will work, A simple introduction, but it followed the right pattern for the code. Pattern said. She needed the first two words of her reply to start with the proper letters. But you said that last time, she wrote, hopefully completing the code. Don't worry, the messenger wrote. You'll like this, though the timing might be tight. They want to meet. Good, Shallan wrote back, relaxing, and blessing the time Tin had spent forcing her to practice forgery techniques. She'd taken to it quickly as it was a kind of drawing, but Tin's suggestions now let her imitate the woman's own sloppier writing with demonstrable skill. They want to meet tonight, Tin, the reed wrote. Tonight? What time was it? A clock on the wall read 1:30 first night bell. It was just first moon, right after dark. She picked up the span reed and started to write, I don't know if I'm ready, but stopped herself. That wasn't how Tin would say it. I'm not ready, she wrote instead. They were insistent, the messenger returned. It's why I tried to contact you earlier. Apparently Yasna's ward arrived today. What happened? It is none of your concern, Shallan wrote back, matching the tone Tin had used previously in these conversations. The person on the other end was a servant, not a colleague. Of course, the reed wrote. But they want to meet you tonight. If you refuse, it might mean a severing of ties. Stormfather, tonight? Shallan ran her fingers through her hair, staring at the page. Could she do it tonight? Would waiting really change anything? Heart thumping, she wrote. I thought I had Yasna's ward captive, but the girl betrayed me. I'm not well, but I will send my apprentice. Another one, Tin? The reed wrote. After what happened with C? Anyway, I doubt they'll like meeting with an apprentice. They don't have a choice, Shallan wrote. Perhaps she could have created a light weaving around herself that made her look like Tin, but she doubted she was ready for something like that. Pretending to be someone she'd invented would be tough enough, but imitating a specific person? She'd be discovered for sure. I'll see, the messenger wrote. Shallan waited. In distant Tashik, the messenger would be getting out another span reed and acting as intermediary to the Ghostbloods. Shallan spent the time checking on the sphere she'd carried in from the washroom. Its light had faded a small amount. Keeping this light weaving going would require her to keep a stock of infused spheres on her person. The span reed started writing again. They'll do it. Can you get to Sabariel's war camp quickly? I think I can, Shallan wrote. Why there? It's one of the few with gates open all night, the messenger wrote. There is a tenement where your employers will meet your apprentice. I'll draw you a map. Have your apprentice arrive at Salas's moon height. Good luck. A sketch followed, indicating the location. Salas's moon height? She'd have 25 minutes, and she didn't know the camp at all. Shallan leapt to her feet, then froze. She couldn't go like this, dressed as a light-eyed woman. She hurried to Tin's trunk and dug through clothing. A few minutes later, she stood in front of the mirror, wearing loose brown trousers, a white buttoned shirt, and a thin glove on her safe hand. She felt naked with her hand exposed like that. The trousers weren't so bad. Dark-eyed women wore them when working the plantation back home, though she'd never seen a light-eyed lady in them. But that glove. She shivered, noticing that her false face blushed when she did. The nose moved when she wrinkled her own as well. That was a good thing, though she'd been hoping to be able to hide her embarrassment. She pulled on one of Tin's white coats. The stiff thing went all the way down to the top of her boots, and she tied it at the waist with a thick black hogshide belt so that it was mostly closed in front, as Tin had worn it. She finished by replacing the spheres in the pouch in her pocket with infused ones from the lamps in the room. That flaw in her nose still bothered her. Something to shade the face, she thought, hurrying back to her trunk. There she dug out Bluth's white hat, the one with the sides that folded upward at a slant. Hopefully it would look better on her than it had on Bluth. She put it on, and when she returned to the mirror, she was pleased with how it shaded her face. It did look kind of silly. But then she felt that everything about this outfit looked silly. A gloved hand? Trousers? The coat had seemed imposing on Tin. It indicated experience and a sense of personal style. When Shallan wore it, she looked like she was pretending. She saw through the illusion to the frightened girl from rural Yaakoved. Authority is not a real thing, Yasna's words. It is mere vapors, an illusion. I can create that illusion, as can you. Shallan stood up taller, straightened the hat, then went to the bedroom and tucked a few things in her pockets, including the map of where to go. She walked to the window and pulled it open. Fortunately, she was on the ground floor. Here we go, she whispered to Pattern. Out she went, into the night. 43. The Ghost Bloods. And thus were the disturbances in the Rev Toparchy quieted, when upon their ceasing to prosecute their civil dissensions, Nalani Lin betook himself to finally accept the Skybreakers, who had named him their master, when initially he had spurned their advances, and in his own interests refused to countenance that which he deemed a pursuit of vanity and annoyance. This was the last of the heralds to admit to such patronage. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 5, page 17. The war camp was still busy, despite the hour. She wasn't surprised. Her time in Carbranth had taught her that not everyone treated the arrival of night as a reason to stop working. Here there were nearly as many people about in the streets as when she'd first ridden through, and almost nobody paid attention to her. For once, she didn't feel conspicuous. Even in Carbranth, people had glanced at her, noticed her, considered her. Some had thought of robbing her, others of how to use her. A young light-eyes without proper escort was distinctive, and possibly an opportunity. However, while wearing straight dark hair and dark brown eyes, she might as well have been invisible. It was wonderful. Shallan smiled, stuffing her hands in the pockets of her coat. She still felt embarrassed by that gloved safe hand, though nobody even looked at it. She reached an intersection. In one direction, the war camp glittered with torches and oil lanterns. A market, busy enough that nobody trusted spheres in their lamps. Shallan walked toward it. She'd be safer on the more traveled streets. Her fingers crinkled on the paper in her pocket, and she drew it out as she stopped to wait for a group of chattering people to move from in front of her. The map looked easy enough to parse. She just needed to get her bearings. She waited, then finally realized that the group in front of her wasn't going to move. She was expecting them to defer to her as they would to a light eyes. Shaking her head at her foolishness, she went around them. It continued like that. She was forced to squeeze through tight places between bodies and was jostled as she walked. This market flowed like two rivers passing one another, with shops on either side and vendors peddling food in the center. It was even covered in some places by awnings that stretched across to the buildings on the other side. Perhaps only 10 paces across, it was a claustrophobic, bustling, jabbering mess. And Shallan loved it. She found herself wanting to stop and sketch half the people she passed. They all seemed so full of life, whether haggling or simply walking with a friend and chewing on a snack. Why hadn't she gone out more in Carbranth? She stopped, grinning at a man performing a show with puppets and a box. Farther down the way, a Herdazian used a spark flicker and some kind of oil to make bursts of flame in the air. If she could just stop off a little time and do a sketch of him? No. She had business to be about. Part of her didn't want to go forward with it, obviously, and her mind was trying to distract her. She was becoming increasingly aware of this defense of hers. She used it. She needed it. But she couldn't let it control her life. She did stop at the cart of a woman selling glazed fruit, however. They looked juicy and red, and had been stabbed through with a little stick before being dipped in a glassy melted sugar. Shallan pulled a sphere from her pocket and held it out. The woman froze, staring at the sphere. Others stopped nearby. What was the problem? It was just an emerald mark. It wasn't like she'd gotten out the brome. She looked at the glyphs listing prices. A stick of candied fruit was a single clear chip. Denominations of spheres wasn't something she often had to think about, but if she remembered, her mark was worth 250 times the cost of the treat. Even in her family's strained state, this wouldn't have been considered much money to them. But that was on the level of houses and estates, not the level of street vendors and working dark eyes. "Ah, I don't think I can change that," the woman said. "Citizen." A title given to a wealthy dark eyes of the first or second non. Shallan blushed. How many times was she going to prove just how naive she was? "It's for one of the treats and for some help. I'm new to the area. I could use some directions." "Expensive way to get directions, miss," the woman said, but pocketed the sphere with deft fingers nonetheless. "I need to find Gnar Street." "Ah, you're going the wrong storming way, miss. Back up the market flow. Turn right. You'll need to go, 6 blocks, I think? It's easy to find. The High Prince made everyone lay out their buildings in squares like in a proper city. Look for the taverns and you'll be there. But, miss, I don't think that's the sort of place one like you should be visiting, if you don't mind me saying." Even as a dark eyes, people thought her incapable of taking care of herself. "Thank you," Shallan said, plucking out one of the sticks of candied fruit. She hastened away, crossing the flow to join those walking in the opposite direction through the market. "Pattern," she whispered. He was clinging to the outside of her coat, near the knees. "Trail behind and watch to see if anyone follows me," Shallan said. "Do you think you can do that?"
"They will make a pattern if they come," he said, dropping to the ground.
For a brief moment in the air between coat and stone, he was a dark mass of twisting lines. Then he vanished, like a drop of water hitting a lake. Shallan hurried along with the flow, safe hand securely gripping the sphere pouch in her coat pocket, free hand carrying the stick of fruit. She remembered all too well how Yasna's deliberate flashing of too much money in Carbranth had lured thieves like vines to storm water. Shallan followed the directions, her sense of liberation replaced by anxiety. The corner she took out of the market led her to a roadway that was much less crowded. Was the fruit vendor trying to direct Shallan into a trap where she could be robbed easily? Head down, she hurried along the road. She couldn't soul cast to protect herself, not as Yasna had. Storms. Shallan hadn't even been able to make sticks catch fire. She doubted she'd be able to transform living bodies. She had light weaving, but she was already using that. Could she light weave a second image at the same time? How was her disguise doing anyway? It would be draining the light from her spheres. She almost pulled them out to see how much was gone, then stopped herself. Fool! She was worried about being robbed, and so she considered revealing a handful of money? She stopped after 2 blocks. Some people did walk this street, a handful of men in workers' clothing heading home for the night. The buildings here certainly weren't as nice as the ones she'd left behind.
"Nobody follows," Pattern said from her feet.
Shallan jumped nearly to the rooftops. She raised her free hand to her breast, breathing in and out deeply. She really thought she could infiltrate a group of assassins. Her own spren often made her jump. "Tin said that nothing would teach me," Shallan thought, "but personal experience. I'm just going to have to muddle through these first few times and hope I get used to this before I get myself killed. Let's keep moving, Shallan said. We're running out of time. She started forward, digging into the fruit. It really was good, though her nerves prevented her from fully enjoying it. The street with the taverns was actually 5 blocks away, not 6. Shallan's increasingly wrinkled paper showed the meeting place as a tenement building across from a tavern, with blue light shining through the windows. Shallan tossed aside her fruit stick as she stepped up to the tenement building. It couldn't be old. Nothing in these war camps could be more than 5 or 6 years old, but it looked ancient. The stones weathered, the window shutters hanging askew in places. She was surprised a high storm hadn't blown the thing over. Fully aware that she could be striding into the White Spine's den for dinner, she walked up and knocked. The door was opened by a dark-eyed man the size of a boulder who had a beard trimmed like a horn-eater's. His hair did seem to have some red in it. She resisted the urge to shuffle from one foot to the next as he looked her up and down. Finally, he opened the door all the way, motioning her in with thick fingers. She didn't miss the large axe that leaned against the wall just next to him, illuminated by the single feeble stormlight lamp. It looked like it only had a chip in it, on the wall. Taking a deep breath, Shallan entered. The place smelled moldy. She heard water dripping from somewhere farther inside, storm water infallibly making its way from a leaking roof down, down, down to the ground floor. The guard did not speak as he led her along the hall. The floor was wood. There was something about walking on wood that made her feel as if she were going to fall through. It seemed to groan with every step. Good stone never did anything like that. The guard nodded toward an opening in the wall, and Shallan stared into the blackness there. Steps. Down. Storms! What am I doing? Not being timid. That was what she was doing. Shallan glanced at the brutish guard and raised an eyebrow, forcing her voice to sound calm. You really went all out on the decor. How long did you have to look to find a den in the shattered plains that had a creepy staircase in it? The guard actually smiled. It didn't make him look any less intimidating. The stairs aren't going to collapse under me, are they? Shallan asked.
It's fine, the guard said.
His voice was surprisingly high-pitched.
It did not collapse for me, and I had 2 breakfasts today.
He patted his stomach.
Go. They wait for you.
She got out a sphere for light and started down the stairwell. The stone walls here had been cut. Who would go to the trouble to burrow out a basement for a rotting tenement building? The answer came as she noticed several extended creme dribbles on the wall, a little like wax melting down the side of a candle. These had hardened to stone long ago. This hole was here before the Alethi came, she thought. When settling this war camp, Sabariel had built this building above an already existent basement. The war camp craters must have once held people. There was no other explanation. Who had they been? The Natan people of long ago? The steps led down into a small, empty room. How odd to find a basement in such a ramshackle building. Normally you found them only in wealthy homes, as the precautions one needed to take to prevent flooding were extensive. Shallan folded her arms, confused, until one corner of the floor opened, bathing the room in light. Shallan stepped back, breath catching. A part of the rock floor was false, hiding a trapdoor. The basement had a basement. She stepped up to the edge of the hole and saw a ladder heading down toward red carpet, and light that seemed almost blinding following the dimness she'd been in. This place must flood something fierce after a storm. She swung onto the ladder and made her way down, glad for the trousers. The trapdoor closed above. It appeared to have some sort of pulley mechanism. She hopped off onto the carpet and turned, finding a room that was incongruously palatial. A long dining table ran down the center, and it sparkled with glass goblets that had gemstones set in their sides. Their glow sprayed the room with light. Cozy shelves lined the walls, each laden with books and ornaments. Many were in small glass cases. Trophies of some sort? Of the half-dozen or so people in the room, one drew her attention most. Straight-backed with jet-black hair, he wore white clothing and stood in front of the room's crackling hearth. He reminded her of someone, a man from her childhood, the messenger with the smiling eyes, the enigma who knew so much. Two blind men waited at the end of an era, contemplating beauty. The man turned around, revealing light violet eyes and a face scarred by old wounds, including a cut that ran down his cheek and deformed his upper lip. Though he looked refined, holding a goblet of wine in his left hand and dressed in the finest of suits, his face and hands told another story of battles, of killing, and of strife. This was not the messenger from Shallan's past. The man raised his right hand, in which he held some kind of long reed. He placed this to his lips. He held it like a weapon, pointed right at Shallan. She froze in place, unable to move, staring down that weapon across the room. Finally, she glanced over her shoulder. A target hung on the wall in the form of a tapestry with various creatures on it. Shallan yelped and jumped to the side just before the man blew on his weapon, shooting a small dart through the air. It passed within inches of her before embedding itself in one of the figures on the wall hanging. Shallan raised her safe hand to her breast and took a deep breath. Steady, she thought at herself. Steady. Tin, the man said, lowering the blowgun, is unwell. The quiet way he spoke made Shallan shiver. She could not place his accent. Yes, Shallan said, finding her voice. The man set his goblet on the mantel beside him, then slipped another dart from his shirt pocket. He tucked this carefully into the end of the blowgun.
She does not seem the type to let something so trivial keep her from an important meeting.
He looked up at Shallan, blowgun loaded. Those violet eyes seemed like glass, his scarred face expressionless. The room seemed to hold its breath. He'd seen through her lie. Shallan felt a cold sweat. You are right, Shallan said. Tin is well. However, the plan did not go as she promised. Yasna Kolin is dead, but the implementation of the assassination was sloppy. Tin felt it prudent to work through an intermediary for now. The man narrowed his eyes, then finally raised his reed and blew sharply. Shallan jumped, but the dart did not strike her, instead flying to hit the wall hanging.
She reveals herself as a coward, he said. You came here willingly, knowing that I might just kill you for her mistakes.
Every woman starts somewhere, Brightlord, Shallan said, voice trembling rebelliously.
I can't claw my way upward without taking a few chances. If you don't kill me, then I have had a chance to meet people that Tin probably would never have introduced me to.
Bold, the man said. He gestured with two fingers, and one of the people sitting beside the hearth, a spindly light-eyed man with teeth so large he might have had some rat in his heritage somewhere, scrambled forward and plunked something down on the long table near Shallan. A sack of spheres. Inside it must be bromes. The sack, though dark brown, glowed brightly.
Tell me where she is and you may have that money, said the scarred man, loading another dart. You have ambition. I like that. I will not only pay you for her location, but will attempt to find you a position in my organization.
Pardon, Brightlord, Shallan said. But you know I won't sell her out to you. Surely he could see her fear, sweat dampening the lining of her hat, trickling down her temples. Indeed, fear spren wiggled up through the ground beside her. though his view of them might be blocked by the table. If I were willing to betray Tin for a price, then of what worth would I ever be to you? You'd know that I'd do the same to you if offered a big enough bounty. Honor? The man asked, expression still blank, dart pinched between two fingers. From a thief? Pardon again, Bright Lord, Shallan said, but I am no mere thief. And if I were to torture you? I could get the information that way, I assure you. I don't doubt that you could, Bright Lord, Shallan said. But do you really think Tin would send me with knowledge of her location? What would be the point of torturing me? Well, the man said, looking down and tucking the dart into place. For one thing, it would be fun. Breathe, Shallan told herself. Slowly, normally. It was hard to manage. I don't think you'll do that, Bright Lord. He raised the reed and blew with a swift motion. The dart thumped as it stuck into the wall. And why not? Because you don't seem the type to throw away something useful. She nodded toward the relics in glass boxes. You presume to be of use to me? Shallan raised her head, meeting his gaze. Yes? He held her eyes. The hearth crackled. Very well, he finally said, turning toward his fireplace and picking up his cup again. He continued to hold the reed in one hand, but drank with the other, his back to her. Shallan felt like a puppet whose strings had been cut. She exhaled in relief, legs wobbling, and sat down on one of the chairs beside the dining table. Fingers trembling, she got out a handkerchief and wiped her brow and temples, pushing back the hat. When she stopped to put the handkerchief away, she realized that someone had taken the seat beside her. Shallan hadn't even seen him move, and his presence gave her a start. The short, tan-skinned person had some kind of carapace mask tied to his face, pulled tight. In fact, it looked like the skin had started to grow around the edges of the mask somehow. The arrangement of red-orange carapace pieces was like a mosaic, giving a hint of eyebrows, of anger and rage. Behind that mask, a pair of dark eyes regarded her, unblinking, and an impassive mouth and chin were also left exposed. The man, no, the woman, Shallan noticed the hint of breasts and shape of the torso. The exposed safe hand had thrown her. Shallan stifled a blush. The woman wore dark brown clothing, simple, tied at the waist with an intricate belt, studded with more carapace. Four other people wearing more traditional Alethi clothing chatted softly beside the fire. The tall man who had questioned her did not speak again. Bright Lord? Shallan said, looking toward him.
I am considering, the man said. I had been expecting to kill you and hunt down Tin. You can tell her she would have been fine coming to me. I'm not angry that she did not retrieve the information from Yasna. I hired the hunter I felt best for the task, and I understood the risks. Colin is dead, and Tin was to achieve that at all other costs. I may not have commended her on the job, but I was satisfied. Deciding not to come explain in person, however, that cowardice turns my stomach. She hides, like prey.
He took a sip of his wine.
You are not a coward. She sent someone she knew I would not kill. She always has been clever.
Great. What did that mean for Shallan? She hesitantly rose from her seat, wanting to be away from the strange little woman with the unblinking eyes. Instead, Shallan took the chance to inspect the room in greater detail. Where was the smoke from the fire going? Had they cut a flue all the way down here? The right wall had the greater number of trophies, including several enormous gem hearts. Those were together likely worth more than her father's estates. Fortunately, they weren't infused. Even uncut as they were, they'd probably glow enough to blind. There were also shells that Shallan vaguely recognized. That tusk was probably from a white spine. And that eye socket. That looked frighteningly close to the structure of a Xanthid's skull. Other curiosities baffled her. A vial of pale sand. A couple of thick hairpins. A lock of golden hair. The branch of a tree with writing on it she couldn't read. A silver knife. An odd flower preserved in some kind of solution. There were no plaques to explain these mementos. That chunk of pale pink crystal looked like it might be some kind of gemstone. But why was it so delicate? Bits of it had flaked off in its case, as if simply setting it down had almost crushed it. She stepped hesitantly closer to the back of the room. Smoke from the fire rose, then curled and twisted around something hanging at the top of the hearth. A gemstone? No, a fabrial. It gathered the smoke as a spool gathered thread. She'd never seen anything like it.
"Do you know the man named Amaram?" asked the scarred man in white.
"No, Bright Lord."
"I'm called Mraes," the man said. "You may use that title for me. And you are?"
"I'm called Vale," Shallan said, using a name she'd been toying with.
"Very well. Amaram is a shard-bearer in the court of High Prince Sadeus. He is also my current prey."
Hearing it spoken like that sent a shiver through Shallan. "And what do you wish of me, Mraes?" She tried but didn't get the pronunciation of the title quite right. It wasn't a Vorin term.
"He owns a manor near Sadeus's palace," Mraes said. "Inside, Amaram hides secrets. I would know which ones. Tell your mistress to investigate and return to me with information next week on Chechel. She will know what I seek. If she does this, my disappointment with her will fade."
Sneaking into the manor of a shard-bearer? Storms! Shallan had no idea how she'd accomplish such a thing. She should leave this place, abandon her disguise, and count herself lucky for having escaped alive. Mraes set down his empty cup of wine, and she saw that his right hand